Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Handling the Heat, the podcast by RestaurantEquipment.biz, where we dive into the real stories behind the people powering the food service industry. On today's episode, I'm joined by Joseph Lappi, former wine director at RPM in Chicago, and now the owner-operator of Carmella's Wine Bar in Pittsford, New York. Joseph's journey runs from family dinners in Buffalo to opening marquee restaurants with Let Us Entertain You, leading beverage programs for RPM Seafood and Pizzeria Portofino, and serving as a guest sommelier at Augusta National during the Masters. We get into how making a mistake about Chianti changed his life, what truly separates great hospitality from good service, and why he built Carmella's to be something for everyone. From tapas to caviar, $20 bottles to splurge-worthy gems, plus thoughtful non-alcoholic options. It's a conversation about standards, community, and bringing big city training home without losing what makes small places special. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us here on Handling the Heat. Super excited to have you on and talk about your food and wine journey.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Joseph, the first thing we ask every guest is, what's something you've eaten recently that you've really enjoyed?
This question's easy. My mother over in Buffalo comes to see her grandchildren every weekend, and she makes her pasta with meatballs and her homemade sauce. It's become a staple at Carmella's. We'll get into that, but she makes it every weekend when she comes up, and it's a delicious little taste of home.
Awesome. Well, let's start there, Joseph. And I know you've had a very interesting journey through the ranks as a somm and a wine director, and now as an owner-operator. But let's take it all the way back to little Joseph in Buffalo and your kind of start into food and kind of that culture around food and wine and community. So can you talk a little bit about how your love of food and wine kind of started?
Yeah, of course. For me, it was just always around, my mother being first generation Italian off the boat from Sicily with her family, parents, and siblings. They came, didn't speak a lick of English, had to adapt, landed in Depew, New York, right outside of Buffalo, and kind of made their way. Growing up, my grandparents lived with me, again, didn't speak English, kind of forced us to learn the language and Italian to converse. But food and wine was just always around. It was a time every day where we would sit around the dinner table, get together, cousins, aunts, uncles, godparents would come in and out, back when having unexpected company was a thing. And we would just sit around the dinner table and have great meals and enjoy conversation. My grandfather would have his glass or two of wine a night. It was just always around, catapulting, to undergrad, went away to John Carroll University, wanted to become and pursue law. I loved dressing up. I thought, being in front of a courtroom would be the way to go and be a lot of fun. And in doing that, you find yourself odd jobs paying off student loans. And that for me was serving, working at places like the Cheesecake Factory and a place called Hutch's in Buffalo, which was an upscale dining, and really finding a love for hospitality first, already having a love for food and wine and really connecting with people. And as I started to go through that and just as an odd job to pay off student loans, I found a love for wine. That's when the sommelier was starting to become a thing in the Americas. It was coming away from that snooty Frenchman with his taste of vin around his neck and becoming a profession that was cool again, truly. And me, young Joe Lappi, 23 years old, I was like, wow, a wine expert? How could that not be just like the greatest thing ever? Single guy, expert in wine, moved to a big city. So I did that. I dropped everything and a buddy of mine moved out to Chicago. Great food and wine scene, not as saturated as New York City, although I do love a quick 48 hours in New York City, but a food and wine scene that was still on the rise. The competition was high, continued to open great new places and did that. Got in with a great company at the perfect time.
Yeah. So I will definitely get into the company for sure with RPM and Let Us Entertain You. But Joseph, I think one of the things that is prevalent through a lot of the conversations that we have here is you have this glamorous kind of lifestyle that you want to bring into your own life. In your case, it's wine and, not necessarily the French traditionalist version of it, but more the kind of US cool, trendy kind of version of it. And I think, I for one have been bitten by the bug for cool, trendy wine for sure, but not to the point of dropping everything and trying to become a somm. So what was that process, this mental kind of take to that goes from, all right, I'm potentially going into law. I'm doing some of these odd jobs. Oh, wow, this looks amazing. This is cool. This is a lifestyle that I want to emulate. Let me drop all that and then go into something that, you know, I have this cultural reverence for given my own upbringing, but it feels like a pretty big jump, no, to go from law straight to wine, even though, you know, you're still dressing up in nice clothes and whatnot, to your point. But
yeah, to answer your question with a question, how many lawyers are there in the world? How many master sommeliers are there in the world?
Less.
You know, it was that go-to moment where I was like, wow, this is such a niche thing to do that is cool and fun. Yeah, there was a night at Hutch's I remember vividly, and a gentleman asked me a question about Chianti. And I told him the wrong thing. And I was like, Chianti was the grape and Sangiovese was the place. And in reality, it's the inverse of that. And I remember I went home and I read about it and I was like, oh man, that is so incorrect. And I went down the rabbit hole of like what Chianti was. And, you know, it must be this percentage of Sangiovese. And you know, there's different strands of Sangiovese out there. And yeah, I found myself just reading about it for hours and hours and then realizing, wow, like there's thousands and thousands of lawyers and there's like not even 200 master sommeliers out there. What a great goal to reach for and to obtain, hopefully, in my life.
So, yeah.
You know, still going for that dream as a family, and things come in and out. But that was kind of what clicked for me.
Yeah.
Like, let's go get that. Let's go get that dream.
Well, that's as good a reason as any. But now let's talk about, you're in Chicago. Was your start directly with RPM? What was your transition into, you know, that kind of world of the competitive restaurant group, you know, high-end dining, you know, work as a wine director?
Yeah, I mean, like many too, I made my bones bartending my way as soon as I got there, which was short-lived. But bartending was a lot of fun. Again, you know, young 20s, bartending at a hot new place in River North Chicago. And again, you just make so many great connections in this industry, whether you're serving, bartending, managing, what have you. And as long as you're a good person, people kind of resonate to that. And, you know, I was on the phone with a recruiter that I had met at Siena Tavern where I was bartending. And they were like, you should reach out. We're opening this great new steakhouse right across the street. And I was on the phone with a recruiter for hours and we were talking about wine. And she was like, you know what? Like, you really seem like you want to pursue this. We're opening this restaurant, RPM Steak. You should put your hat in the ring to be a sommelier. I'll sit you down with Richard Hanauer, who was the wine beverage director of the time. And so I did that. And when I did, he schooled me hard. I just was not ready.
And you're switching up the Chianti and Sangiovese, and he was...
Yeah, he asked me some tougher questions than that. Sure. But he was like, listen, Joseph, you know, obviously great personality. You seem like you'd be a great fit. We just don't have a place right now on the wine team. So why don't you come on as a bartender? You know, you'll get trained by Paul McGee, one of the best in the business. And we'll go from there. When there's an opening, you prove yourself, you know, we'll get you on the team if we can. And I did that, opened RPM Steak with Let Us Entertain You. And 4 months later, you know, they came calling and there was a spot and they gave it to me. And that was what changed my life forever.
Did you start your sommelier training prior to taking that role on? Or was that something you did in parallel once you like got in the door, had your foot in the door, started bartending at this, you know, nice new restaurant, and then, you know, made your way into the wine team?
No, I had coincided my move to Chicago with my intro in Chicago. There was an intro exam in Chicago that week that I had moved. So I had started that journey kind of like in parallel with it.
Yeah.
And here I thought, you know, past my intro, I thought I was, you know, hot shit. And, sat down with Richard and man, he took me down a peg. Really, you really don't understand how much there is in the world of wine once you really start getting into it and peeling back the onion. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So what was the transition going from bartender then into the wine team? Although maybe less of a stark contrast between being a budding lawyer to working in the food and wine space, but still I'm sure a pretty big jump in terms of what was expected of you and what your day-to-day looked like.
Yeah, I had to come to the table quick with knowledge. You know, a lot of big wine drinkers in Chicago, a lot of money in Chicago, people wanting and willing to spend for the, you know, the great wine list we had, award-winning, really, really spectacular. So coming up to speed with all that from, you know, making 300 old fashions and dirty martinis a night was quite a change, you know, wearing a suit and bow tie as opposed to, you know, bartending vests and walking the floor with confidence and elegance and really elevating service. You're, as a sommelier, you're the height of hospitality in a restaurant. You're not just pouring wine. You're the best busser there is and food runner there is. And if Dish Pit needs you, you're in there too. I mean, it really is just the height of hospitality in every way, shape, and form. So just getting the bearings on that was awesome and great training. And like I said, lettuce is just, Lettuce Entertain You is the best. Couldn't have done something like Carmella's without them.
So you had a pretty long standing career with Lettuce Entertain You, right? Working your way up the ranks. I want to talk about that before we talk into kind of your new venture here back in Rochester, as well as some of your other, you know, side quests as a sommelier. But what was the process for you going from, you know, first bartender to, you know, som in RPM Steak, and then kind of making your way up through the ranks of a definitely competitive, very well-trained, very well-renowned restaurant group through their wine, you know, back-end program?
Yeah, so a true tenure. I was almost with Lettuce for 10 years to the day before I had left for good old Pittsford, Rochester, New York. And in that tenure, you know, I was 4 years at RPM Steak, which we had opened from scratch. Going through an opening was, with a restaurant group like that, was incredible. The training, the hiring, just seeing how they peel back the onion on their end of things and really make it the best they possibly can. And the shortcuts that they don't take, you know, and doing everything the right way to get the best out of you and the best out of the restaurant, it was amazing. I did, became the sommelier with them on the sommelier team, which there were three of us at the time, and kind of took over bar management, cocktail management, creation, stuff like that, liquor inventory, you know, all those jobs. And then we started to open more RPMs, you know, RPM Italian in DC, and we started to hire wine directors for out there. And Richard kind of oversaw that entire program still. And then we opened a restaurant on the water called Pizzeria Portofino and RPM Seafood, a gigantic building, a ton of staff, again, doing a restaurant opening with a great company like that. And they offered me to be the wine director of RPM Seafood and Pizzeria Portofino, as they thought I'd earned it, which was an honor for sure. And, you know, this big $50 million build out and this beautiful, you know, riverside space right on the water. And it was just this huge building and just glitz and glamour all around. And they chose me, which I was so honored. But a lot of pressure there,
I'm sure.
And then COVID happened. You know, we shut down, the world shuts down, and, you know, we pivot in a way like every restaurant did to kind of stay alive, you know, and to go selling our wines, our unicorn cellar that we'd had been collecting for 5-6 years at this point, the rare Bordeaux gems and Northern Rhone, you know, unicorns of the world, and just selling them to the highest bidder to pay our employees' insurance while they were furloughed. And, you know, again, seeing how they handled all that was just unbelievable to be a part of, and what they did for their staff who were let go for COVID. Just amazing people.
And I think it's a testament to the Chicago food scene as well, to have that kind of, you know, money backing it for sure, but to have that kind of ethics and way of working that really thrive with competition, I think, because, you know, you're trying to get the best people, the best servers, the best bartenders, the best.
For sure, but competition, I mean, what's great about the industry is like, you're in it together, you know, even though it's a different, you know, competing restaurant company, you guys are in it together. I mean, you know, your competitor right next to you, everyone borrowing lemon juice if you need it, or romaine if you need it, you know, it's just kind of like one of those things that it is such a close-knit community, even though you're in competition, sort of, you're in it together too.
Yeah. Rising tide floats all boats. Yeah, there you
Absolutely.
Go.
Very good.
Cool. So Joseph, I'm curious, because you've worked, you know, boots on the ground as a som and as working through and pairing different, you know, meals with different bottles and selling the actual, you know, unicorn bottles and things like that. And then you've also worked as more of like a people manager and, you know, build out specialist with Pizzeria Portofino and RPM Seafood. What skills were transferable from the som position to the more managerial position? And what was totally different for you going from that, you know, more boots on the ground kind of view to, you know, being in a more of this managerial overseeing position?
Yeah, you go from this thing of handling wine as gentle as possible and treating it with respect to handling people and treating them with respect and learning how to navigate these adult humans who are in their careers. And you gain their respect first as best as you can. And then training and bringing them up and making sure that they know that they have, you know, someone to confide in, and managing them and that group of people as opposed to managing a $1 million seller. And that's really the big difference. And, you treat both with respect and you treat both carefully and you make sure that you're doing the right thing by both wine and people and they give back everything both in a
yeah
way
that's cool. So it sounds like it's not too different, it's just the thing that you're working with maybe is
exactly
a little bit
as
different.
Long as you handle it with respect, you're gonna be
yeah
okay.
That's great. So, Joseph, let's now talk about your transition, you know, back home to Western New York from Chicago. So can you talk a little bit about what drove you from, you know, this, you know, high-end, glitzy, to use your terminology, kind of lifestyle that you were living on a day-to-day basis, and then going to a place that, you know, I being from there, I know that there is some glitz and glamour, but the general population probably doesn't think of Western New York as that kind of, you know, lifestyle. So what was that transition like for you, the decision to go back, and what was the kind of expectations of that?
Yeah. So here I was, you know, in my tenure at Lettuce, I had built myself up to the corporate wine and beverage position at RPM Restaurants, overseeing Vegas, DC. I mean, what a dream, yeah. What a dream it was. But I think that you do anything for your family. And I had met my wife. We had two little kids, Joseph and Carmela. And, you know, my wife was a great prosthodontist in Illinois, and she was doing great, great work. And her dream was always to come back and take over her mom's practice in the basin of Pittsburgh. And, you know, when we had our two children, high rise in downtown Chicago isn't the easiest place to raise a couple babies. And so we had that discussion and we really did the pros and cons. And yeah, you know, I think it was a tough transition and pill to swallow, but I think you do anything for your family, you know, working hard to get to where I was and to leave it all behind at the drop of a hat for my family. I would do it 100 out of 100 times, but it was definitely tough. And it brought us back, you know, my kids have a backyard. My wife is with her mother in her thriving practice, and everything happens for a reason. So
yeah,
that kind of is what definitely brought us back. And I would do it again if I had the opportunity.
And I think that kind of harkens back to your, you know, upbringing and the close, tight knit, you know, family meals that you were having and whatnot, and being able to provide that to your children and your wife and extended family, I think is an awesome.
The child care helps. The child
care
helps.
I'm sure.
Too.
I'm sure. Cool. So Joseph, I want to talk a little bit about, so you're going from RPM and Lettuce, what is your job lined up when you move over to Rochester? You know, you want to get back to Pittsburgh, to Rochester. Talk a little bit about that process of finding a place and, you know, what the expectations were for that.
Yeah. Like you said, I mean, for those that don't know, Western New York, upstate New York is a budding food and wine destination. They're not quite at the level of New York City or Chicago. And I don't think they need to be or want to be. They're themselves and they have their own identity. But yeah, you came to the realization when I, you know, I sat down with a few of the big players in, you know, Rochester and, you know, country clubs and thought I could kind of do a similar role. And in reality, there just isn't the money that there is in Chicago, and there isn't the, you know, notoriety, which really doesn't matter, but the programs and the money that they were willing to put into their beverage. And, you know, it wasn't a good fit. You know, originally I was going to come back and open a new location up in Greece. You know, and that fell through for some terrible reasons, but we got through that. And at that time, I had just been offered to be a sommelier at the Masters in Augusta. And so when the other job in Rochester fell through, it was, you know what, we have our things in boxes already. We've already given our 2 weeks. Why don't we go back? You go to Augusta. Once I come back, I'll figure it out. And that's kind of what we did.
That's awesome. So let's pause there before we get back to upstate New York. To Augusta. So what was that process like, and how does that compare to being a som for, you know, a restaurant, being a som for the Masters, which I think is an amazing, you know, title to have and an amazing experience, I'm sure, for you too.
How lucky. Right place, right time again. I'm just kind of with like getting it with Lettuce at the right time. Right time, right place, with the right people, with an opening there. You know, it's a position. Every year there are five or six guest sommeliers that get invited besides the wine and beverage director of Augusta National and his sommelier team. There's five or six of us they bring in for the tournament, obviously thousands and thousands of people. And we handle the wine for the players and the members and their families all week long. So we're there for 10 days. They bring you in, and I just got to pause and say, Augusta National is the coolest and greatest place in the country. And they are so kind in allowing all these employees who don't work their grounds 365 days a year to come in and operate their dining rooms and their cellars and serve their guests and members and players. And they allow you to do so, and they do it with grace and empathy.
So are you bringing any of the wines in, or you're only pairing the wines that they have in their cellar to the meals for the players and members and their families?
No, they have everything ready to go. I mean, they built up a year for this event every year. You know, they're working years in ahead for
Monday morning, they're looking at the wine list and trying to bring some more.
We're doing pure service, man. I mean, they're ready to go. Their cellars are stocked and they have their wine lists are printed and fresh. And we just do service, pure wine service for players, members, and guests.
What's the best wine for high performance in golf, would you say? If I were to go out and play 18 tomorrow, what should I be drinking beforehand?
A cold bottle of champagne after a hot 18 or some Dagenau Selex, would be delicious. Some crisp Sauvignon Blanc. But, you know, they go Cabernet and they go great Bordeaux of the world and the great Napa Cabs of the world, for sure.
That's such a cool experience.
It is. It's a pleasure and a privilege, for sure.
Yeah. So, Joseph, you do that. You're on your way from Chicago back to Pittsford, New York. You make a stop down in Augusta and, you know, brush shoulders with the best of the best in golf, feeding them, serving them nice champagnes and Sauvignon Blancs after, you know, hot Georgia days while they're playing. And then you make your way back up to Pittsford. So Carmela's, which is in Schoen Place in Pittsford, right on the canal, very beautiful setting. What is the kind of thought behind opening up a wine bar, given your background, obviously, in wine?
Yeah, it was a grind, like opening any business, but also I was just driving around looking for property. You know, when I realized that I wasn't going to be the best fit for the restaurant groups already here, and I wanted to do something a little bit more with wine and food in a different way that was already here. Add a jewel to the crown of Rochester as far as dining goes, and follow in the footsteps of the pioneers and the people and Richard and the Josh Miles and the people that have been here doing great things already, and just adding to that. I was just driving around looking for great locations, and I didn't know the area that well. My wife's from here, not me. And just asking the people close to me, you know, what do you think of this place? What do you think of that place? Foot traffic, you know, and I stumbled upon, again, right place, right time, a good, great location on Schoen Place or Schoen Place, however you decide to say it. And again, it was closed for business for numerous reasons. And, here I was ready to kind of take the torch and start the, you know, keep the magic of wine in the building. It used to be a wine bar, wine retail shop.
Yeah. I always grew up calling it Schoen Place, but I could be totally wrong. I don't know.
I've been corrected. So I've been saying Schoen, but I've been corrected.
My whole vocabulary now with the area. But I think the interesting thing is, so I live in New York City and we do a lot of work with wine forward restaurants on a day-to-day basis. And I partake as a, you know, patron of those places. But I think what's interesting is it feels like it is a pretty interesting business model given its focus on wine. And I'm sure you've read, and I've seen it all over the news, there's like a massive decline in alcohol consumption in general. And I think, you know, health benefits, whatever, I think regardless of why it's happening, the outcome is still the same. But there is still this necessary experience that you're providing that I think the general restaurant, you know, has it in part, to your point, but doesn't have it as the forefront of its experience, which is these are these amazing wines that you handle with respect, have unbelievable history, and you're pairing it with food like your mother's meatballs and things like that at Carmela's. Why? How do you feel about the wine bar business model in general versus, you know, the more typical kind of restaurant with wine business model?
I love it. And I'll tell you why, because great questions. And for me, there's a few different ways to skin this cat as far as an answer,
sure.
But I wanted something for everyone. I wanted, which can be a detriment a lot of times, you do too much. I wanted to have something for every palate, every budget, every style. You know, I wanted to build a product and a program for the guest and not just myself. And I think that is a detriment a lot of times to a lot of wine and beverage professionals where they try to get too cute with what they love, not understanding where they are and their guests and the people that are coming to enjoy an experience at their place. And I just wanted to do my best to be as inviting and as hospitable as possible. So you can come into Carmela's and get some tapas for $10, or you can get some caviar for $30. Okay. You can come in and get a bottle of wine for $20, or you can get a bottle of wine for $2,000. You can get a whiskey cocktail or an agave cocktail, all $13. So just making it as approachable as possible while keeping the quality and the consistency and doing it with a smile and giving the best hospitality you can. Because in the end, people are going to remember delicious food, sure, but they're definitely going to come back for the hospitality, the warm, inviting atmosphere you create, without a doubt. How many times do you go back to a place when the food and wine is okay, but the hospitality is great? You can have the best food and be treated rude and you'll never go back, even though it was the best food you ever had, and you'll never return. And I think that was kind of like the challenge accepted. You know, when you talk about declining sales of alcohol, it's so true. You know, people are more into their health. People are, you know, not drinking for various reasons. We have non-alcoholic wine, white and red, sparkling. We have non-alcoholic cocktails to appease those palates and those guests. We really took the time to sit down and create something that, you know, you're just like my family, you're a company in our home here. You're a guest in Carmela's, you're a guest in our home, and we're going to make you feel that way. And we're going to have something for you, whether you want prosciutto or caviar, non-alcoholic, agave, you name it, we got it for you.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we just, if you build it, they'll come.
Yeah. And they have come based on, you know, what I've read about Carmela's and the reviews. And, you know, I think it's a testament to that ethos that you're describing of make sure that you can be something to everyone and make sure that how that something is delivered is with a smile and with upstanding, you know, service. The interesting thing too, Joseph, I think is you come from a background that's big city, right? Not your upbringing, but your background in the food and hospitality space. Yep. Is Chicago. It's nice steakhouse. It's nice seafood restaurant, nice pizzeria, you know, $1 million wine cellars. How we talked a little bit about skill translation from, you know, handling wine to handling people. How did translating that kind of big city experience down to this small town experience translate for you? Was there anything that you recognized as unexpected, maybe when opening up this place versus what you had anticipated or what your experience was in the big city, I'm sure?
Yeah, accessibility of product for sure was the biggest thing. But I had a wise man once tell me right before I had started in this venture to not get too hard on myself. And you're not going to be able to fit a Chicago peg in a Pittsburgh hole. You know, you're not going to be able to make Carmela's RPM. Don't do that. Walk into the space, feel the concept and make it its own. Don't try and make it RPM or don't try and make it, you know, let us entertain you concept, even though they have it so figured out, because it's not that. So, you know, figure out what you want to do, what you want it to do, and then take the tidbits of, you know, their training and their, how they treated people and, you know, what they did for their employees and, you know, all those nuggets and use those, but how it fits in the space of Carmela's Wine Bar. And that's what I did. You know, we hired the best people we could find, the kindest, most hospitable humans. And I trained them on my dime to make sure that they knew how to make the best Negroni and the best dirty martini. And they all made it the same. How to do wine service, and they tasted all the food, and we trained the hell out of them. And they are just as much in love with this place as I am. And it's amazing to see.
It's almost like a pay it forward moment for your, I mean, you call it luck, but you know, luck is preparation and opportunity or whatever the, you know, phrase is, but it's a cool pay it forward moment for you to have had that amazing experience and be able to bring that to the people of Pittsburgh to partake in, but also the service workers in the area too. So I commend you in doing that. Awesome. Joseph, thank you so much for your time. Really excited to try Carmela's out myself next time I'm back in Pittsburgh. And
you're always welcome.
Really excited for continuing to watch your journey.
Thank you so much. And it means a lot having me on here. I truly appreciate the ask.
Yes, definitely. Awesome. Thanks.